Hello, Lover's Message listeners. It's good to be with you again. This is producer Matt. As I'm sure you already know, here on the main feed we play excerpts from the patrons' episodes. What you're about to hear is 10 minutes of a nearly 2-hour discussion on all things krautrock that's currently available only to patrons. If you'd like to become a patron and hear much, much more, there's a link in the show notes as well as a description of what's in the episode. Or you can head to patreon.com/lovemessagepod. I hope this whets your appetite and you'll join us in the patrons feed very soon. But if not, no worries. Keep listening, keep dancing, and we're happy to have you along for the ride. Okay, over to Jeremy.
That's Sandrine Dream from 74. Let's jump back 3 years to 1971. A year after that first Kraftwerk track, the same year as that, a year after that first Tangerine Dream track, same year as Asherah Temple. This is the moment we've all been waiting for. Can, if any band is like the krautrock band that is still remembered and celebrated today, it's Can. Ermin Schmidt, Holger Sukai, Michael Karoly, Jackie Liebezeit. And on vocals, initially, they have this American guy, Malcolm Mooney. But their kind of glory years are generally regarded as the years 70 to 73, when they have the Japanese vocalist, Damo Suzuki, as their front guy. And there's a number of different tracks we could have played. I think arguably the most representative and typical of this moment is the 1971 track from their album Tego Mago. The track is Hallelujah. Now, here you hear something you can arguably hear the tiniest echoes of on something like the Kraftwerk track, but you hear it very distinctively in Can, is that not only are these guys not just influenced by Stockhausen, Schmidt and Zukai were actually his students. They were students of Stockhausen. Though Zukai often said that he reacted against Stockhausen as much as being influenced by him. But they are also clearly listening to James Brown. They're clearly listening to funk. You know, Jackie Liebezeit, the great drummer, if this is rock music, one of the great rock drummers, clearly influenced and by what's happening with funk music and the way it's using percussion rhythm. The whole group is influenced by that. My understanding is that much as, say, the Miles Davis group were doing at exactly the same time, they would often jam for a really long time, and then Zukai in particular would edit the tapes to create a more seamless sound. So whether they were this tight for the whole 10 minutes in reality, or whether it's edited together, I'm not sure, but it's really a kind of extraordinary...
It was 18 minutes, isn't it, this track?
Yeah.
Not 10.
Okay.
Fine. You just did a major edit on the track.
And just an extraordinary sound. I mean, extraordinary kind of combination of, you know, acid rock and funk. But also, they're influenced by a kind of minimalist aesthetic, which we've talked about before on the show, which is coming from minimalist composition. I don't know. I should know. I'm now thinking I really should have. There are certain things I should have researched that I thought I didn't. I'm only thinking. This always happens. We're always saying this on the show because these things occur to us while we're talking. They didn't occur to us when we sat on our own, beavering away in our wood paneled rooms. So, but
yeah, right.
But I don't know if they were listening to dub or reggae at this time, because I know that Zukai is interested in tape editing as a method of producing the final tracks. And there is this quality to the music that that they're not just throwing in more and more and more in the way that they're more directly heavy.
Surely the tape editing comes from like Stockhausen reggae. I mean, they do go. I mean, we know some of their later recordings, or at least I do. You know, some of them got played at, you know, How Much Are They? It's kind of classic record they got. David would play. So, you know, they get very into dub reggae, but I don't know if just because they do some tape editing, that means that they're into dub reggae at this point. I think it means that they students of Stockhausen.
It's not just the tape editing. It's the way that makes me think of dub. It's the way they're using it in a kind of extractive quality. So what you're getting, the sound you're getting, it feels like you've taken that kind of heavy noise of acid, of an acid rock jam, and then you've sort of stripped out elements that are superfluous. So it's that kind of subtractive element of it. But it doesn't really matter whether they were influenced directly. Either way, the result, I think, is pretty astonishing.
What I'm almost more interested in, and this I'm sure this has been established, is the extent to which they're listening to maybe the Grateful Dead.
Well, they definitely were aware. Yeah, they definitely were listening to the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, so I don't know what the conversation is between these two forms of music, if they're seen as like connected or completely distinct.
No, that's a really good point. Well, I don't know about reggae. I know they were listening to the Grateful Dead, and I know they were listening to funk, and they were listening to James Brown. And of course, I mean, that subtractive quality to the music, I mean, can also be coming directly from James Brown. I mean, arguably, that's what James Brown is doing to jazz in a way. You know, he's stripping out elements, streamlining them, tightening them to turn them into something else.
Yeah, I completely agree.
That's definitely what Can would do. Can were definitely listening to that. And I think, arguably Can are the first people who really sort of understand, in some sense, the formal radicalism of what James Brown is doing, I think. And more than his contemporaries, more than he himself understands it, arguably. In some sense, they're coming at their music making from a historic and learned commitment to a sort of deliberate avant-gardism, and they're really, I think, they're grasping something about what James Brown is doing and applying it in their context in a way which is quite unique. And yeah, I mean, they're one of those bands that I just, and this is one of those tracks that you just sort of, at certain times in my life, I've heard this, and just thought, well, why haven't thousands of bands made music like this? Because this is a great kind of music. It's sort of mesmeric, it's psychedelic, it's danceable. There's so much of that moment at the same time. I've always thought that about the Miles Davis albums from exactly this moment. There's something about this moment in the early 70s. Well, there isn't just something about it. We've spent hours on this show theorizing and explaining what it is about that moment. But they are another expression of that sort of Afro-psychedelic possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they were listening to Miles Davis, weren't they? Or at least, you know, these bands that we're not calling krautrock bands were listening. They were listening to James Brown, and they were listening to, you know, Silent Way as well.
Can, extraordinary. And the name Can, yeah, it did just mean can. It was just an allusion to the, as I understand it, to the Andy Warhol Campbell soup can. So they had this slightly pop art sensibility, and certainly my understanding is, you know, they understood what they were doing not just as an extension of a Stockhausen avant-gardism, but also as a rejection of it, as a critique of it, as being unnecessarily sterile, unnecessarily academic, unnecessarily cerebral. So very sort of sophisticated in their approach, and in some ways anticipating sort of critiques of avant-gardism, which have become much more prevalent in the postmodern epoch in the late 70s and 80s. And you could make quite similar claims about another contemporary band of theirs, some contemporaries of theirs. Neu. Neu just means new. Neu, it's always Neu! Exclamation mark. Neu also came from Dusseldorf, and they're basically a duo, Klaus Dinger and Michael Rother. Rother's the guitarist, and Rother was the guitarist in Kraftwerk. So Rother was the guitarist on that Kraftwerk track that we heard.
And Klaus Dinger was in Kraftwerk as well, I think.
They were both in Kraftwerk. Yeah, you're right. They were both in Kraftwerk, and then Ralph and Florian were the other half of Kraftwerk. That's right.